Okay, basically, in the last 2 weeks, we have been discussing how one properly fulfills the Nisayon of Lech Lecha. Explained that any person who has the understanding and the courage and the foresight to leave his birthplace, place where he's grown up, used to, and family and friends, and come to Eretz Yisrael, to settle in Eretz Yisrael, gets his power to do that from Avram Avinu. The fact that Avram was able to fulfill that Nisayon and to leave all of those things and come to Eretz Yisrael created a reservoir of power for all future generations to call from that reservoir. Okay. And we explain that the Nisayon includes cutting oneself away from foreign influences on three levels. On Arzacha, to leave that which creates a different personality. The Jew has to have a certain kind of personality, certain kind of lifestyle, and you have to leave the Arzacha, the personality, the lifestyle that's foreign to what Klal Yisrael is, foreign to Torah, and create a different kind of lifestyle that Eretz Yisrael is conducive to. Moladetecha is the involvement with the material world is different in Eretz Yisrael than it is by the nations of the world in their lands. Their lands and their involvement with the world is on a secular level, and our involvement is where every single thing has to do with Kedusha. And lastly, Beis Avicha, we have to create a dynasty, we have to create a future in Eretz Yisrael that's built totally on Jewish values and Jewish concepts and Torah values and Torah concepts. Jewish values doesn't mean too much. Everybody interprets it a different way, what Judaism is. But Torah values, that's what Jewish values are. Torah values and Torah standards and so on. And we explained in pretty much great detail last week what the greatness is, what the benefits Klal Yisrael could reach by Avram and any subsequent generation tearing themselves away, separating themselves from the negatives of other lands and creating the positives in Eretz Yisrael. Okay, that doesn't mean that one can't create negative things in Eretz Yisrael. Look around. But that doesn't mean either that one can't create positive things in Eretz Yisrael. The people who say that everything in Eretz Yisrael is negative are liars, and the people who say that everything is positive in Eretz Yisrael are liars. What a person has to do is to see the emes. And the emes is that Eretz Yisrael is the place that is most conducive for the most positive things for Klal Yisrael. And if one wants the positive things, this is the place that he best can achieve them. On the other hand, if you want to go against the grain, you want to fight against what Eretz Yisrael is about, you can be successful to a certain degree. Not for too long, unfortunately, or fortunately. But you can be successful for a while. In Chutz La'aretz, one can also accomplish many positive things, but he's going to have to do it as a fight against what the land itself is conducive to, which is things that are negative to Torah. And sometimes we are forced to be in that situation. We had to fight against the environment and create many positive things, but it was a fight. And if one has the ability and the bracha to be able to leave that negative environment and settle himself where it's more conducive to be positive, and therefore where he can accomplish much more in a positive way for the present and the future, that's where he should be. In any case, that's the godless. Those are the greatness, the benefits. That's what we spoke about in the past weeks. There are four brachas, though. From all the greatnesses, all the potential greatness that Klal Yisrael can achieve in Eretz Yisrael, it has to, l'maisa, be more than just a potential. It has to be put into practice. There are four brachas. The bracha is the actual fulfillment, the realization of that greatness. It's a bracha. The heye bracha, you will be a blessed person. If you reach these three levels, your personality will be a Torah personality. Your involvement with the material world will be from a Torah perspective. And your future, your family, that which you give over to future generations will be in that same vein. And they'll go michayel ochayel from one generation to the next, greater and greater. Then, if you have all of that potential, you'll be a bracha. That's the greatest blessing. You will be the one who can give blessing to the world. And therefore, va'avorcha mevorchecha, those who bless you, I will bless. Because they will be supporting that which is proper. And those who curse you, I will curse. Because a curse for you is a curse against the world. It's a curse against the development of the world. It's a curse against me, the Rebbe Mishlam says, because you represent me. You're doing my job. And therefore, someone who tries to interfere with my job, I'm going to have to interfere with them. And finally, v'nivrechu v'chor kol mishpachos v'adama. Not only will you benefit yourselves, but you will be a blessing to the entire world. The whole world will learn from you. There are four different brachas. The heye bracha, v'avorech mivorchecha, u'mekalelcha or, v'nivrechu v'chor kol mishpachos v'adama. The three greatnesses, the Medrash says, emanate from the power of the Avos. Avraham separated himself from Arzacha, he separated himself from the physical land, even though he still was born somewhere else, and his father's home was still somewhere else. But at least he accomplished that. Yitzchak was born in Eretz Israel, he already separated himself from a foreign birthplace, and Yaakov already began a dynasty in Eretz Israel. So each of these greatnesses correspond to one of the Avos. The four brachas correspond to the Imahos, Sarah, Rivka, Rachel, and Leah. They also have a part in this. And perhaps the greater part. Because all of the greatnesses are potential. They're theoretical. But there has to be something that puts it into practice, that brings it into the real world. And that is the chelik of the woman. The woman creates a home. A home is a vessel. It's something that gives parameters, that gives a place for all of this greatness to be created. The woman has the ability to take all the theoretical knowledge that the men learn and put it into practice. In that respect, the Svarim say that the man is like the neshama and the woman is like the goof, like the body. Now, it's not a degrading idea. But just like the neshama can't exist in this world ethereally, right? So you can't have just the neshamas in this world. Neshamas can exist in Olam HaEmet. In order for the neshama to exist in this world, it needs to occupy a vessel, it's called the goof, that gives it the ability to function in this world. So too, all the lofty ideas of Torah, if they remain just lofty ideas and they're not brought down into the practical world, they're worthless. And therefore, in this world, Torah has to be put into practice. It's the woman who has the bina, right? There's knowledge, and then there's bina, understanding. Chazal described bina as mevin dover mitoch dover, understanding the knowledge and understanding what its implications are, putting it into practice, making it more realistic, more in a way that it's able to be handled and dealt with in a practical way. The woman was given more bina than the man. Bina yaseira nitna beisha yosem mivaish, and that's the bracha. If you want all of these theoretical greatnesses to translate themselves, to realize themselves in practical things, in real bracha, then you need the kli, you need the vessel, which the woman creates to bring that bracha into the world. Bracha is found in the home only from women. So says the Gemara in Bava Metzia. Ein ha-bracha shruya beveso shel adam, ela bezchus ha-isha. Right? The woman is the source of all bracha. Bracha meaning the that which is theoretical, that which is spiritual, coming into the real world. In last week's parsha, just to connect it to the parsha a little bit, the Sarah Imenu herself had three brachas that were associated with her, that when she died, they left the home of Avram, and they only came back when Rivka entered the home. There was an Onan Kosher Al Habayis. There was a cloud, a spiritual cloud that represented God's presence, just like that same cloud was by the Mishkan, that was constantly present over the home. There was a bracha in the dough, right? Whatever she made, whatever physical things she involved herself in, had a bracha in them. And there was a ner dolek me'erev Shabbos le'erev Shabbos. She lit candles erev Shabbos, the candle didn't go out till the next erev Shabbos. And then she put it out and she lit again for the next Shabbos. The Shabbos candles burned an entire week. The idea is the following. There are a few benefits. I don't want to go into great detail. I've spoken at various times about this in great detail, but since it fits into what we're talking about, to be able to understand these four brachas, I'm going to just mention it peripherally. There are basically a few functions of what a Jewish home has to be. One purpose of the home is to erect walls where there's a Rishus HaYachid, where a person has his own private place and he shuts out the influences from the outside. That's one purpose of a home. Literally as a mechitza, as a partition, to shun out, to shut out that which is not proper, that which is not beneficial from the outside. At the same time, the walls of the home, aside from shutting out the outside, create an inside. They unite everything that's inside the home. That's the Indian of Shalom Bayis. Shalom Bayis means a home where everybody's doing their part. We mentioned that last week. Right? Shalom Bayis doesn't mean a house where everybody's quiet. Right? It means that nobody is active and everybody is just getting along with each other because nobody's doing anything. That's the idea. It unites everyone within those walls. And then the home has a door that leads to the outside. At the same time that you have to shut out influences that are negative from the outside, but you have to be open to put influences that are positive from the home, from what you create in that home, to the outside. So the door opens to the outside. On the other hand, there are walls that hold back the negative things from the inside. The two mitzvahs that represent those ideas are Ner Chanukah and Mezuzah. The Mezuzah keeps the negative things from coming in, and the Ner Chanukah shines the light to the outside. In any case, these were the brachas that Sarah brought to the home of Aaron. She created a home. She created a home where there was an onan kosher, right? There was a spiritual cloud that connected itself to the home, which didn't let, it was a guarding cloud that didn't let the wrong kind of influences enter the home. And because of that, there was a bracha in everything that was created in that home. The isah, the dough, right? The accomplishments of the home had a bracha in them. And there was a ner dolek, there was a light that shone to the outside, the light of Shabbos that filled the house with a light that could extend to the outside. And not only that, but made shalom bayis. The purpose of ner Shabbos, there should be light, people shouldn't trip over each other. There should be shalom in the home. That also were the things that Sarah Imenu brought to Klal Yisrael. That was Veheye Bracha. Sarah represented the ultimate, the general bracha, that if you'll go to Eretz Yisrael and you'll that kind of personality, you'll create that kind of material existence, you'll create that kind of dynasty, and then if you put it into a home, into a Jewish home, it'll be practical. That's what the Ribbono Shel Olam wants. And Sarah Imenu took all of the things that were individual things, that were parts of what her husband and her son and her grandson had, and she put them all together into a bias that inculcated all of these ideas in a way that was practical, in a way that actually brought real bracha. And then there was the Avorcha Mevorchecha, I'll bless those that bless you. Once a person works for the Ribbono Shel Olam, once he's the Ribbono Shel Olam's agent, once his home is a home of the Ribbono Shel Olam, then it's in the Ribbono Shel Olam's interest to strengthen those who want to strengthen you. There's an inyan, bichlal. If you see somebody doing something good, to give them a yasher koach. What does yasher koach mean? Yasher kochacha. Right? Your strength should be straightened. Right? Rabban should give you strength to continue. In that way, you show that it's not only that you agree with what they're doing, it's a nice thing, but you want to take a part in it. You want to, if you agree with it and you think it's good, help out. And if you can't help out physically, at least help out with moral support. There are two places we see this idea. One that's obvious, and the other one's a little bit of a midrashic license, rabbinic license. The one that's obvious, that's what it means, is the Gemara says, "Kol hamazkir tzadik ve'eino mevorcho over be'esek." A person who mentions a tzadik and he doesn't bless him, he doesn't say zecher tzadik levracha, right? That's a blessing for a tzadik. We use that now for only tzadikim who are no longer here. Maybe it's because it's easier to bless tzadikim who aren't here. The ones that are here already, it's harder to bless. That's also a problem. But in any case, from that pasuk, Zecher Tzadik Levracha, we learn that when you mention a tzadik, you should bless him. You should show that it's not just an idea. You want to support tzidkus in the world. A bracha is a support, a moral support. It's really kabbalistically even more than that. But I don't want to get waylaid, so we're just gonna mention that. That's all. But it's more than moral support. But it's at least moral support. And the same thing, a person who mentions a Rosh and doesn't curse him is over an essay. V'shem Roshoyim Yirkov. The name of a Rosh should rot. Because if there's evil in the world, at least morally I have to say I'm against it. I can't remain apathetic. I can't remain just passive. Nice to have tzaddikim in the world, and it doesn't bother me if there's rishoyim in the world. It should bother you. And you should be happy if there's tzaddikim. You should want to support it. Similarly, I was thinking, the Gemara says, to kol ha-nehem ha-misudas choshen, ve'eno misamcho, person who comes to a chasana and he enjoys the meal, but he doesn't make the choshen and kala happy, is over behe kolos. He transgresses five voices, kol choshen, v'kol choshen, v'kol simcha, kol choshen, v'kol kala. So what, there's no mitzvah in kol choshen, v'kol simcha, kol choshen, v'kol kala, you're over, right? You transgress those five kolos, those five voices. There's not a mitzvah you can transgress. What does it mean? So I was thinking the idea is the following. Person who goes to a chasana obviously is all in favor of the institution of marriage, right? It's a fine thing. It's the future of Klal Yisrael, right? So he's there, and he basically supports the inyan, theoretically, right? He's nehenna misudas chasana. Not so much he's nehenna from the schnitzel that they serve or whatever, right? That's not the hanor that it's talking about. His nehenna misudas chasan means that he enjoys, he approves, he agrees, he understands the importance of the concept of marriage. Right? It's an ikr for Klal Yisrael. But eno misamcho, he doesn't do anything in an active way to promote this marriage. What's the purpose of misamea chasan v'kala? Right? Why do we make the chasan v'kala happy? Because the initial yisod and shoresh, the foundation and the root of anything, basically sets the pattern for everything that comes afterwards. And therefore, if the root and the foundation are strong, then everything that comes after that will be at least built on a strong foundation, even if it's weak and even if it's shaky. But the foundation is okay, it's fine. Therefore, the first 7 days of marriage, which is the foundation of the marriage, we want to make the chasan and kala so happy that they'll have a basis of happiness that'll last them the rest of their life. Right? Everybody knows that after those first 7 days, it's not exactly as happy as it was those 7 days. They're not always laughing, right? There's not always people dancing in the house, right? Unfortunately, they live in a real world, and things are not as always the simcha as the sheva brachas are. But at least if you have that infusion of such an intense simcha, a little bit of it can be taken even in the hard times, even in the difficult times, even when there's not so much simcha, but a little bit of that sheva bracha simcha seeps in to 40 years later, and 50 years later, and 30 years later, and at difficult periods. That's the purpose. So a person who approves of the concept of marriage, and he's at the chasna, go for it, but he doesn't do anything to strengthen it. Do something, strengthen this idea, be involved. Then he's over. Over means he's missed the point. He completely ignores these five kolos. The Rav Shem created kol chasan, the kol simcha, kol chasan, the kol kala. He created the simcha and the chasan in order to strengthen the voices of the chasan and kala. And the last call is kol omer hodu Hashem, and all of that is in order they should praise the Rabbanu Shalom. Marriage is something that brings to Kiddush Hashem its Kiddushin. And you sit there and you enjoy the idea and you don't get involved. You don't do anything to strengthen it. You don't do anything to make it more real, more productive. Then you have missed the point. You are completely neglecting and disregarding those five kolos that the Rabbanu Shem created. Okay. I'm not saying it over. It's not such a Rabbanu Shem. It seems to be more close to the pshat. Okay. In any case, when did they reach that level that we were so much involved in doing the Ratzon Hashem, right, that we deserve that the Rabbanu Shem should want to bless. He should want to do that. If I see somebody wanting to help Klal Yisrael, I want to help them. They're doing the right thing. I want to make it that I should intensify the efforts of anyone who wants to help Klal Yisrael. That came with Rivka, the second of the Imahos. She volunteered. She came from a strange home. She wasn't Avram's wife, that when Avram decided to be Makar the Rabbanu Shalom, he brought her into the family and she had the same goals. Yiska, she socha beruach HaKodesh. She had Ruach HaKodesh. She was Rivka, who lived in the house of Lavan and Besuel. And this Eved came and said, I want to take you to a strange man you never saw, right, who's years your elder, right? She was 3 years old. And once you get married, in 10 years you're going to consummate the marriage, right? For 10 years you're going to sit in his house. She never saw him. She doesn't know who he was. She lived with Lavan and Besuel. And the father and mother said, let's keep her here maybe another year, another 2 years. Maybe Yitzchak should come here. And she had the guts to say, no, I see that there's something extremely important. There's a Klal Yisrael being built. I want to be part of that, right? She, when they asked her at 3 years old, she said, I'm going. And she understood where she was going to. She was the aim that represented an interest to aid the building of Klal Yisrael, to voluntarily say, I want to be a part of that. I want to strengthen that. I want to have a portion of that. And therefore, because of the godless of Rivka, the Rabban Hashem said, if you can be like that, then I can also be like that. Anybody who wants to help Klal Yisrael, I'm going to help them. I'm going to give them a bracha. They should be able to be successful in their aid to Klal Yisrael. And then, Mekalel Cho'or, then they reach even a higher level. We say in Elokai Nitzor, as it once bothered me, this idea, and I think I have a pshat in it. Maybe there are other pshat. We say, Rabban Hashem, Elokai Nitzor, Lashoni Meiroh, Sfasai Medabir Mirma. We ask the Rabban Hashem to keep our mouth from speaking the wrong kinds of things. Anybody who curses me, I should keep quiet, right? I shouldn't let it bother me. I should be like Ofer. Okay, so that's a very nice madrega. Somebody curses me, Rabban Shalom, I'm not going to take it to heart. Right? Like Ofer, like dust, like earth. Then we ask the Rabban Hashem to open our hearts to Torah and mitzvahs. We should run to do mitzvahs. Our hearts should be open to Torah. And anybody who thinks bad against us, thwart their plans. We just said in the beginning, if somebody curses us, we shouldn't take it to heart. So if somebody thinks bad about us, why do you have to run and thwart their plans? You should also say, if anybody wants to do bad to us, we won't take it into consideration or whatever. The idea is the following. Before we said, so we're ourselves. So the most we can say is, look, somebody curses me, I'm not going to take it to heart. But now that I'm working for the Rabbanu Shel Olam, I'm already on the Rabbanu Shel Olam's payroll. My heart is open to Torah, I'm doing mitzvah. Somebody wants to do bad to me or curse me, he's already hurting the Rabbanu Shel Olam, not hurting me. He's hurting the business. Right? I'm already a Shliach Hashem. I'm not an individual anymore. Right? Now I represent the Rabban Hashem. Somebody wants to harm me. They're thwarting Avodas Hashem in this world. Then Rabban Hashem, please, stop them. Because now I can't worry about myself alone. I have to worry as myself, as a representative of the Rabban Hashem. Now I have a right to say, stop their thoughts. Thwart their plans. Because what they would want to accomplish is not just against me, but it's against what I represent, what I can accomplish. That's the idea. The same thing. When did Klal Yisrael reach the level of the Mekalel Cho'or? It's a tremendous level that the Rabban Hashem should curse people. No, it's okay, it's okay. I'm not going to say why, but just stay. It's a he or a she. I'm sure what she had to say was much more important at that moment. I didn't understand it, but I guarantee you somehow it did a lot more in Shomayim than what I've been talking about. The noises I've been making are not as great as those noises. When did we reach the level of Olim Kalalai Nafshi Sidon, that of Mekalel Cho'or, that those who curse you, I will curse? Where we were so involved and so moser to the Rabbanu Shel Olam, right? On one level, we reached it when Rachel had Yosef and Binyamin, because Yosef and Binyamin were those who will destroy the evil forces against Klal Yisrael. Amalek and Esau were given to the hands of Yosef and Binyamin. But I was thinking even more than that. What did Rachel do? In order for a person to deserve that the Rabban Hashem should punish someone else and curse them because they curse him, right, the person has to be totally self-negative. They negate themselves and they're totally servants of the Rabban Hashem. What's best for the Rabban Hashem is what's going to be. What did Rachel do? Right, it says, let me just give you a medrash and we'll see from this medrash that we explain it. It says after the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, all the Avos came to beg the Rabban Hashem to forgive Klal Yisrael, give them a chance to come back to Eretz Yisrael. And each one, the Rabban Hashem said, I'm sorry, but Klal Yisrael have done terrible things, and there's nothing you can tell me and nothing you can do, and even your merit is not going to help. Avram, Yitzchak, Yaakov, Leah, Sarah, Rivka, nobody helped. Until Rachel Imenu came. And Rachel Imenu said, Rabban Hashem, what bothers you? That they put an idol in Tush. You're jealous. I'll tell you what I did, right? I'm a human being. And I wasn't jealous of my sister. I was betrothed to Yaakov Avinu, right? It was my wedding. My name was on the invitation. And my father took my sister Leah and substituted her. And Yaakov knew that there was a chance that would happen. He knew my father. And therefore, we made up a code that even though our voices were similar, but if Yaakov would call out to me and with my name, Rachel, I wouldn't answer. Only when he called Leah would I answer. And if he only if I answered Leah would he know that it's me, Rachel. If I said Rachel, he'd know that it's Leah. And that way, Leah, of course, without knowing that, right, if she would want to disguise herself and not be embarrassed, when Yaakov said, who is it, she'd say Rachel, and immediately he'd know it was Leah. And the embarrassment that she would have. So she, the night before the chuppah, when Rachel realized she had nothing to do, she was going to be substituted for, she told Leah what the code was. She said, whatever you do, say it's Leah, don't say it's Rachel. And she saved her sister from embarrassment. She said, I didn't have a right to be jealous of my sister, right? My father substituted my sister for me under the chuppah, and yet I had enough rachmonis on my sister. You're a Rabbanu Shalom. You're going to be jealous of some idol they substituted for you. You shouldn't have the same rachmonis. And the Rabbanu Shalom listened to Rachel Imenu, Rachel Mevako al Bonera, and the Rabbanu Shalom said, okay, Rachel, you stop crying. Yesh tikva lachriseh. From you will come hope. There's hope for Klal Yisrael. What does that mean? It means that Klal Yisrael can function on a level. That's what Rachel brought, where they're totally self-negative. My own personal interests are not as important as the interests of Klal Yisrael. And it's saving my sister from embarrassment, because that's what now is what the Rabbanu Shalom wants, obviously. If the Rabbanu Shalom lets it go through, then that's obviously his will. Then that's more important to me than my own COVID and my own building Klal Yisrael, and I'll have to take a step aside, let my sister take over. But she shouldn't be embarrassed. If a person can negate themselves to the point where they are totally a function only of Klal Yisrael of the Rabbanu Shalom, then they deserve that people who curse them, those people should be cursed. Because the curse is not against an individual, it's against the Rabbanu Shalom himself. That's Rachel Imenu. And finally, the Nivrichu v'cho kol mishpachos v'adama. All the nations of the world will be blessed through you. You'll be a symbol to the nation. That's what happened through Leah. Leah's children, Levi and Yisachar and Reuven and Shimon, all the Shvatim, were those who taught the world what it means to believe in a God, who taught the world what it means to live a godly existence, that at least when they keep their seven mitzvahs, they should keep it in a way that will make the world a better place to live in and not a place of destruction. Those are what the Imahos accomplished. I was thinking also, Leah had another milah. It says that Leah cried constantly. That's why her eyes were so weak. She cried constantly because she figured that Yitzchok had two children and Lavan had two children. And they would be matched up, just like Rivka came from that family for Yitzchok, so the children would also be matched up. The older would go to the elder and the younger to the younger. So Rachel would get Yaakov, and she was going to marry Esav, and it bothered her tremendously. In the end, most of them were married by Yaakov. I was thinking that Leah really saw that Taka, she was supposed to be Bechelkel Shor Esav, but not to marry him. But eventually her children would have an influence even over the children of Esav. Even they would be influenced by Leah. Not directly, but indirectly. Through her children, that they would have an effect even on Esav in the future. And therefore, Rachel's children destroyed the evil things that couldn't be corrected. And Leah's children were able to influence those parts of the non-Jewish world that would be able to be influenced and not destroyed. Right? There are two ways of dealing with evil in the world. One is to turn on the light and change the darkness into light, and the other is to destroy that which can't be salvaged. Rachel took care of the destructive way, and Leah took care of the positive way. And therefore, Rachel represented Umekalel Chor, and Leah represented V'nivruchu V'chor Kol Mishpachot Adam. Okay. In any case, let's go on now. So we see now what the greatness of Eretz Yisrael is. It gives the person the potential, the theoretical potential of greatness, and the women have the ability to change that theoretical greatness into something practical. And every aliyah, that's the way that it is also. It's basically dependent on the woman if it's going to be practical or not. People come with tremendously high ideals and tremendous idealism. And Lamaise, when you come here, you realize you have to live in the real world. And it's the woman, usually, it's the wife, who has to put it into practice, make it real, right? And deal with all the pettiness that exists, right? And all the things that could destroy the idealism in a week or two, right? I remember I remember with all the idealism coming to Eretz Yisrael and leaving what appeared to be the godless of Chutz Laaretz, right? The big home and the big salary and all the other things.
For the continuation of this program, please turn over the cassette.
You're going to do something for Klal Yisrael, okay? But when there's a gas strike and you're forced to sleep in a gas station all night because they won't give you any gas, right? You begin to think, what's the purpose of the idealism? This is what I came for: sleep in a gas station. It's at those times that it's the women who can put things in perspective. When the idealism is sometimes quenched and destroyed almost by the petty everyday things, then the test is. Is the woman going to be able to guide her family the proper way, or is she going to be the reason to destroy it all? If the woman is in the right place, she'll take everything and say, no, what's it called, the idealism still has to be. And this is not such a big deal, and that's not such a big deal, and we'll put it into practice, we'll make it work with all the things. And if the woman can't do that, or sometimes either of it, because the woman can't bring all the idealism into the practical world. And that's one of the reasons why people leave Eretz Yisrael. So, put a lot of responsibility on the women. But no, that's everybody has responsibilities. Men have to put on tefillin and get up early to daven, and women have other responsibilities. That's also a responsibility. I wouldn't want to trade them, I'll tell you the truth. So there are people who come to Eretz Yisrael with all of this idealism, with all of these great plans, and then there are people who just come for whatever. I don't really know why they're coming. Why they come for the wrong reason. Avraham came because the Gur Banasham said Lech Lecha, and he told him all these things. And it says Vayelech Imo Lot. He told Lot. Lot went with him. The Vilna Gaon says the difference when it says Imo, and when it says Ito. Imo means with him in mind and in body. Ito means just in body. Lot also went to Eretz Yisrael, but he only went in body. He didn't have the great ideas and the concepts and why he's going, what he's separating himself. He didn't separate himself from anything. He took Chutz Laaretz with him, trying to transplant it in Eretz Yisrael. That's a problem. And therefore Lot ended up, his aliyah ended up the way it did, in Sodom. Also in Eretz Yisrael, but you can create a Sodom in Eretz Yisrael too. And Avraham ended up his aliyah with Netzach Netzachim, with an everlasting dynasty. The only time it says that Lot was Imo was when they came back from Mitzrayim. When they came back from Mitzrayim, they both had the same intention to return to Eretz Yisrael. Then it was Imo. But to leave Chutz Laaretz to begin with, to come to Eretz Yisrael, there was only Ito. Lot did not share the same idealism, the same ideals that Avraham had. Hopefully. I don't know. It doesn't say anywhere clear that he did tshuva, but he had certain, right? Either he did tshuva after the Rav, maybe after he learned the lesson of the Rav, he came with different ideas. Maybe the second time around he came differently. Could be. But that's what I'm going to discuss now. And that is the nisayon of the Rav. Here the Rabban Hashem promises Avraham everything, right? Person, the Rabban Hashem was better than any shliach, right? Who told you that everything's going to be fine, there are no problems in Eretz Yisrael, you're going to live here like who knows what, and all this chuyot that you possibly could have, you're going to have, right? The Rabban Hashem promised Avraham everything. And then when he came here, immediately, what was the first thing that he came to? A famine. And he couldn't stay here. He would have starved to death. Right? And he had responsibility for other people with him. So he had to leave. And he went to Mitzrayim. And there his wife was in danger. She was taken away by Paro. All of this Avraham could think, Rabbanu Shalom, you know, I really had these great plans and great ideas, and I really trusted you that this was really the place I should be. But I have my second thoughts. Maybe this is not the place I should be. I come here, there's a famine in the land. Where's the I don't see any of it. And a person can immediately question, where is it all? Patience. So you go to Mitzrayim a little while, and then you'll become back a rich man. It says that Avraham Avinu, when he came to Eretz Yisrael, had nothing. He had to take everything on credit. But when he came back from Mitzrayim, he paid up all his debts. Right? So there's hope. A person could even pay up his debts in Eretz Yisrael the second time around, possibly. But it took a leaving Eretz Yisrael for a rov. In any case, the Ramban says that Avraham Avinu sinned by leaving Eretz Yisrael, seemingly. That's what he says. By going to Mitzrayim, Avraham sinned. And because of that, his children were enslaved in Egypt. And the Tzoras that Klal Yisrael went through. He put his wife in danger. He went to Mitzrayim. And that he sinned. So says the Ramban. And there's a Zohar that says the same thing. The Ramban is extremely, extremely difficult to understand. Because, first of all, it's against the Mishnah. The Mishnah in Pirkei Avos says that Avraham was tested with 10 tests. And he passed them all. One of the tests was the Rav. And he passed it. How could the Ramban say he sinned? That he didn't pass it? How could the Ramban argue? Could the Zohar argue on the Mishnah? The Mishnah says that Omad Bekula, and one of the tests was the Rav. So I was thinking, the idea could be the following, okay? I don't know if this is 100% true. I haven't found any source 100% that supports it. But because of the strength of the question, there has to be some answer. And this seems to be an answer. And that is, there were two things here. There was leaving Eretz Yisrael and not having questions on the Ribbono Shel Olam. Is this really a good place? Is this really the place I should be? Right? Did I really give up everything for something worthwhile? Because he came to Eretz Yisrael and found it to be something he couldn't even live here. He had to leave. Would he question the Ribbono Shel Olam? That was one part of it. That was a test. And he passed that with flying colors. And he had to leave. The halacha is that if you can't eat, you're going to starve to death, you leave, but you only leave on menach to come back. You're not allowed to leave. Avraham left, but he had intention to come back. He only left temporarily. He left until the situation would become better. But there was another part here, and that's where Avraham sinned. He chose to go to Egypt. That was the problem. He should have gone somewhere else, or he should have waited for directions from the Ribbono Shel Olam where to go. What was so terrible about going to Egypt? What was terrible is not so much Mitzrayim, and that's what the Ramban says. Not that we were enslaved because Avraham went to Egypt. Because the Gemara gives other reasons. That's another question on the Ramban. The Gemara gives other reasons why we were enslaved in Egypt for 210 years. And none of them are the fact that Avraham went to Egypt in the famine. The question is, why Egypt? We were enslaved, we could have been enslaved anywhere in the world. But why Dafka and Mitzrayim? Because Avraham went to Mitzrayim. The thing is like this. When a person is forced to leave Eretz Yisrael, right, he's forced. He has no choice. There are certain situations where it's impossible. And he's still only allowed to leave with the intention of coming back. One day I'll be able to come back. You can look at it two ways. Eretz Yisrael failed me. Or I wasn't on the level to get from Eretz Yisrael what Eretz Yisrael had to give me. The first way is the chet of Avraham Avinu. He passed the test with flying colors. But by choosing to go to Mitzrayim, he showed that I feel there's one place that can give me what Eretz Yisrael can't give me. And Mitzrayim, which is the antithesis of Eretz Yisrael, you should feel that in Mitzrayim you can get what you need, and in Eretz Yisrael you can't. That already is a chet kod. Why? Because Eretz Yisrael can give you everything. Remember 2 weeks ago we said the Maaser of Shimon Bar Yochai, or maybe it was last week, right? You want all the money in the world. You can get it in Eretz Yisrael, but that's not what you're here for. It's not that Eretz Yisrael can't provide it. The Kli Yoker says in Parshas Veschanan, it says that Eretz Yisrael is Eretz Asher Lo B'Meskenus Tochal Bolechem. It's a land that you won't eat bread out of want, out of need, okay? Because you're a miskain, because you're a needy person. So Pashas, it means that you'll have plenty of bread to eat, you won't be needy. But he says no. He says the following. Usually poor people have nothing more to eat than bread. But they eat it out of necessity because they have nothing else. In Eretz Israel, you won't need more than bread. You'll be happy to eat bread. Bread with this vegetable, that vegetable, another vegetable. You won't have to have fancy main courses. You'll be satisfied to eat bread and be full on bread, not because you need it, though. Not because you're needy. Not because Eretz Israel can't provide you with lamb chops and steaks and who knows what else. It could, but you won't need it there. You'll be satisfied to eat a minimum because you have too many other things to do. You'll be so involved with ruchnius that you won't need more than the bread. You won't eat bread out of necessity, but you'll still eat the same bread. But it won't be out of necessity. It's not because Eretz Israel can't provide more. It could, but you don't need it. It's not necessary. That's the idea. It's Eretz Israel sechsar kol bo. Eretz Israel can provide everything. But sometimes maybe you're not on the level to receive it. It's not because Eretz Israel can't provide. It's because maybe you're not here with the right intention. Maybe you're not doing what you should be doing. And therefore, Eretz Israel doesn't give you what you need, not because it can't give, because you can't receive. So when a person's forced to leave Eretz Israel, he has to have in mind, I'm leaving only because right now I'm not on the level to get from Eretz Israel what it can give me. My intention is to come back and to be on the right level. Maybe sometimes you have to learn what Eretz Israel was about by being outside of Eretz Israel for a while. Sometimes that teaches you to understand, appreciate. When you have something, you don't appreciate it. Take it for granted. When it's taken away from you, it's deprived from you, if you look at it like that. If you look at it, Eretz Israel can't provide. So you're not deprived of Eretz Israel. Adarabba, you're lucky to get rid of it. But if you look at it, Eretz Israel can provide, but I'm not on the level to get it. Then when you're outside of Eretz Israel, you feel deprived of Eretz Israel. You long to come back. And that longing makes you appreciate what Eretz Israel is all about. And when you come back, then you'll maybe try to be on the level to deserve those things that Eretz Israel can give. So you leave temporarily, not because you feel Eretz Israel can't provide, and there's some other land that can provide. But I'm not on the level to get from Eretz Israel. And therefore, the Rebbe will find the place where he feels that I'm on the level. Let him decide. Or even if I choose a place, it's not because of this place has all the right things where this can provide. No. If Eretz Israel couldn't provide, there's no other place that can provide either. But maybe in a place of a lower madrega, no, maybe there you'll be zocha. You can't be zocha to have direct contact with the Rebbeinu Shlom. He'll deal with you through his emissaries or whatever in Chutz La'aretz. But it's not that any one place can give you what Eretz Israel can't, especially in Eretz Mitzrayim, which is the antithesis of Eretz Israel, as we spoke about in the past, where everything there happens indirectly, and here everything happens directly. There the Rebbeinu Shlom gave everything over. So a person who feels, I need Chutz La'aretz, right, that's what's going to provide. And Eretz Israel can't provide, that's already a chet kodesh. And therefore, a person who lives in Eretz Israel, the Avnei Nezer says, the epitome, the ultimate of Yishuv Eretz Israel is where a person is not dependent on Chutz La'aretz at all. Not dependent on Chutz La'aretz. His whole parnosa comes from Eretz Israel. That's the epitome of Yishuv Eretz Israel. Okay? It's a goal. It's a goal. Right? Unfortunately, unfortunately, the whole country depends on Chutz La'aretz. Unfortunately. We're not on the level yet to have that real Yishuv Eretz Israel. Right? I guarantee by the time Mashiach comes, we won't depend on Chutz La'aretz. Chutz La'aretz will depend on us. The truth is, I'll tell you something, I just saw recently a story. It had to do with something else. There was a father-in-law who supported his son-in-law learning Torah for about 10 years. After 10 years, the son-in-law got a offer of a position to be a rav in a certain place. And the daughter felt she had to ask her father. I mean, it's not right. He'd been supporting him for 10 years. I had to ask permission to leave Talit. The daughter came to her father, and she said, we'd like to go and accept the position of Rabbonis. The father said, no, under no circumstances. The money that you need, I'll give you more money. Just stay here. They stayed another 5 years. 5 years later, they got another offer for a bigger Rabbonis. So the son-in-law went to his father-in-law, and he said, we'd like to leave in a better position. He said, please, if it's money that you want, I'll give you more money. Just stay. Finally, 5 years after that, he got a position offered to him to be the rav of a tremendously big city. And the daughter said, we can't say no. It's my husband's future. All the money in the world is not important to us. So she begged her father, and finally the mother-in-law got involved. She said to her husband, what's it called? You know, we've been supporting these people 20 years already. You know, shine tight. Maybe they should go out and you should talk to take the Rabbonis. So the father-in-law said, I don't know who's supporting who here. But he said, I can't stand in your way. And he let the person take the job. When they packed up the wagon, the day they left, the father-in-law died. Who knows who was supporting who? Could be the same thing, right? We think that it's America that's supporting Eretz Israel, the Jews in America. I don't know who's supporting who. Maybe the Ribbono Shel Olam made it the way that it is, that they should have a kiyum, that America should have a kiyum. It doesn't have too much schus to be mekayim, right? It's not too much different than the Roman Empire was when it declined. It needs some schus. So the schus is that they keep Eretz Israel going. That's their schus. If they'll stop, it won't be us that suffers. It'll be them that suffers. In any case, that's a possible thought. I'm not a Navi, I don't know. I promised that we would get back to Tefillah. We've basically, that was the Nisayon of the Rav. There are times that a person has to leave Eretz Israel. There are times that a person doesn't have to leave Eretz Israel, but he has to take support, at least, from Chutz Lars. He has to feel dependent on things outside of Eretz Israel. But it depends how he feels that. If he feels that Eretz Israel can't provide, there's something wrong. If he feels that he's not on the Madrega to get what Eretz Israel can provide, then that's the right approach. Okay? A person, therefore, feels even in petty things, that he needs whatever it may be, the petty mayonnaise and tuna fish, and even though now all those things, Baruch Hashem, exist here. Right, you can get even Kellogg's cornflakes and all the breakfast cereals that, if you want to pay that amount of money. But whatever it is that a person feels that he can't get in Eretz Yisrael is either one of two things. Either it could be you don't need that, or Badafki shouldn't have it, or Eretz Yisrael can provide that. But that's not what Eretz Yisrael is all about. Right? There's other things to provide. You want it, it can provide it. But a person who feels that Eretz Yisrael can't provide him, it's missing something. And he doesn't look at it as the fact that maybe what's missing is not necessary. Or maybe what's missing is missing in him and not in Eretz Yisrael. Then there's something wrong with that attitude. Okay. In any case, Yitzchak Avinu was the Av who didn't leave Eretz Yisrael. He never left. Never left. Avraham, obviously, for the good portion of his life, lived outside of Eretz Yisrael. He left Eretz Yisrael to go to Mitzrayim. Right, he doesn't say after that he had left Eretz Israel. But Lamaisa, there was nothing wrong with him leaving if he had to leave. Yaakov Avinu spent years and years outside of Eretz Israel. Only Yitzchak never left. For anything, even when there was a famine, the Ribbono Shel Olam said, you stay here in Eretz Israel. You can't leave. I want to say an idea, the following idea, and this will get us into Tefillah. Avraham represented Chesed. Okay? He was the Amud HaChesed. Avraham Avinu was Mesakein. He instituted the prayer of Shachris. Okay? Why? Because Shachris represents the body. Okay? In the morning, a person is the most physical that he is the entire day. His neshama is groggy, right? Anybody who knows how hard it is to drag your body out of bed in the morning knows that you're the most physical and weigh the most in the morning, right? The hardest to move around those first few minutes in the morning. And a person, therefore, is the most physical. His neshama is at its low ebb in the morning, and his body is at the high ebb. And in the morning, a person basically takes his neshama and pulls his body out of bed and subjugates himself to Avodas Hashem. It's a subjugation of the body. That's what Shachris is. So says the Maral Miprag. The Maral says Shachris is subjugation of the body. Chesed, the Gemara says, what's the difference between tzedakah and chesed? Tzedakah you do with your money. Chesed you do with your body. Avraham Avinu, who is the Amud HaChesed, represented subjugation of the body to the Ribbono Shel Olam. That's Tefillah Shachris, chesed, the body. Yitzchak Avinu, he was Mesakein Tefillas Mincha, okay? And the Mefarshim find it very difficult to understand why Mincha is called Mincha. Mincha means an offering. It's the offering of flour and oil and wine that's really called Nesachim. That also goes into the Mincha. That what? Because the Mincha, Nesachim is also called a Mincha. That's what goes along with the sacrifice. Now, in the morning, there's also something that went along with the sacrifice. So why isn't it called Shachris Mincha? And in the evening, there was also an animal with this extra stuff that was called the mincha. So why do we call that mincha? Why is tefillas mincha called mincha? It should be called tefillas ha-tzoharayim. This is shachris, this is arvit, this is tzoharayim. Erev avoker v'tzoharayim. Why is it called mincha? So there are two ideas. One is because it comes at the time of Menuchas Hayom. There are two times of Menucha. There's Menuchas Halayla, there's the rest of the evening, and there's the rest of the day. Towards the end of the afternoon, a person stops working. He takes a rest from his daily activities. That's one reason why it's called Mincha. From that Minchas Yom, right, the resting time of the day, the time when the sun begins to go down. But there's another idea, and this I saw, I don't remember who says it. But it's from the, not from somebody recent. He says the following, that Yitzchak Avinu, he himself was the korban. He was brought as a korban. He didn't have to bring himself as a korban anymore. But he said, how could there be a korban without a mincha? If I'm the korban, at least let me bring the mincha along with me. Let me bring the flour and the oil. Korban I can't bring. I was brought as a korban. I already am a korban. I can't bring myself twice. My father brought me as a korban. I am a korban. So now, the only thing he could add was the mincha. Yaakov Avinu didn't bring the korban, not the mincha, but he burnt the both of them. At night, what happens? You don't bring any sacrifice at night, but you burn that which was brought during the day. During the day, you sprinkle the blood, and you cut the sacrifice into the portions that have to be burnt on the Mizbeach, and at night, they're burnt on the Mizbeach. That's what's done at night in the Beit HaMikdash. Yaakov Avinu, we'll skip Yitzchak for a second. Yaakov Avinu represented Torah. Torah is the negation of this world. Okay? Torah is beyond this world. Torah is Chaye Olam. Torah is Olam Haba. It's a direct connection with the Rabbanu Shel Olam. Transcending, not negating, transcending this world. Chaye Olam. Yaakov Avinu took the carbon, the body, that Avram subjugated. And Yitzchak took the, what's that, those people, Yitzchak took the mincha. What's the mincha? Along with the body, the chesed, there's also avoda. Avoda means I take all the physical things in the world and I refine them and I use them and I unite them for the avodas Hashem. What's avoda? Korbanos. Korbanos is I take the animal, the vegetable, the mineral. I take the flour, right? I take the wheat and I make it into flour. I take the olives and I make them into oil. I take the grapes and I make them into wine. And I subjugate my property for the Rabbanu Shel Olam. That's Yitzchak, avoda. As we said, Yitzchak was the av that represented the avorechecha, I'll bless you materially. All the material acquisitions. In this week's parasha, Yitzchak is a rich man who knows how to collect acquisitions in this world for the proper purpose. That's mincha. Mincha comes at the end of the workday when a person's involved with all his kinyonim, with all of his work, all his material things, and he takes a rest from them, and he directs them and utilizes them for avodas Hashem. If shachris was the subjugation of the body, mincha is the subjugation of the material acquisitions that a person has in this world. And mincha is a special eis ratzon. It's a special time of desire that the Rabbanu Shel Olam has for Klal Yisrael, because it's the person who can take the whole world and elevate it to the Rabbanu Shel Olam. That's something extremely special. Yaakov Avinu took the body and took the material acquisitions and transcended them with Torah at night. Right? He took them both, and instead of utilizing the body and utilizing the kinyonim, he transcended the body and transcended the kinyonim to have a direct relationship with the Rabbanu Shel Olam. That's the highest level. But you need the other two first before you have anything to burn, before you have anything to transcend. First you have to know how to live in this world. Then you can know how to live in Olam Haba. Then you have to know how to live beyond this world. If you don't know how to live in this world, you can't know how to live in a world beyond this world. So Yaakov Avinu was the ultimate, the transcendence of this world. And therefore, Tfilas Arv is only Rishus. You don't have to daven Marv. If you're middle of learning, you don't have to daven, Tosu says. Right? If you're involved with another mitzvah or whatever, then davening, which is Chaye Olam, Chaye Shoah, it's only this world. It's material life. At Marv is not all that important. At Marv, you're beyond that. But Shachris and Mincha is mandatory to daven. What is davening? Davening is also, we take everything in the world, health and parnasa, and Yimos HaMashiach, and everything, and Slicha, and Kapara, and Tshuva, all the things that go into making this world, all the material things, all the everything. And we unite it in service of the Rabbanu Shel Olam. Right? We ask the Rabbanu Shel Olam to give us the utensils that we'll be able to serve him. That's what Avoda is. That was Yitzchak Avinu. I was thinking, Chesed, the goof, sometimes has to leave Eretz Israel. Right? You can force the Jewish body into Chutz Laretz, and Chesed can exist in Chutz Laretz. Torah? Most certainly, sometimes the Jew, the Neshama, has to leave Eretz Israel. Torah is mobile. Torah can be anywhere. But there's one thing that can't be anywhere, and that's Avoda. Avoda means you can transcend this world anywhere. You're not dealing with this world. then anywhere can be Olam Haba. Your body can be anywhere. Chesed is a material, a body thing. Your body can be anywhere. But Avoda means taking the physical world and elevating the Kedusha. That concept is only in Eretz Yisrael. Eretz Yisrael is the place where the Chassam Sofer said, the mitzvah of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael means all the physical mundane things. Agriculture and commerce and politics and everything that builds society, that's Eretz Yisrael. So Eretz Yisrael is the only place that a Jew can build this world and utilize it for Avodas Hashem. You're not allowed to make korbanos anywhere else. Only in the Beit HaMikdash can you take the minerals and the vegetable and the animal and unite it to the Ribbono Shel Olam. In Chutz La'aretz, the Chassam Sofer says, whatever a Jew builds in Chutz La'aretz goes to destroy Klal Yisrael. It doesn't go to build up Klal Yisrael. Anything that we help to build in Chutz La'aretz, eventually the Goyim use it against us. It's only in Eretz Yisrael where a person builds that he's building Klal Yisrael. He's building for Jewish cause. He's building for Torah. Ultimately, it'll be in our hands, not in their hands. In Chutz La'aretz, who has to look more than neighborhoods? How many neighborhoods in America? Forget about countries that we were in, where the only things that are left are grave sites that we're restoring. But what's left of the godless that Klal Yisrael built in European countries, in Spain, in Portugal, in Rome, in Babylonia, in Persia, right, in all of Eastern Europe, what's left of it? Nothing. And don't go that far back. Go to neighborhoods. What's left of Brownsville in New York, and then this neighborhood, and another neighborhood, and another neighborhood, and the East Side, whatever it is. Things that Yidden built for Torah, for Yiddishkeit. Go and find crosses on them. They're churches now in places where there were shuls. On the other hand, Rabbi Yosef Chaim Zonnefeld said the opposite in Eretz Yisrael. In Eretz Yisrael, whenever he saw buildings being built in Yerushalayim, he was tremendously happy. So once he was extremely happy, he saw there were buildings. So one of the Talmidim said, why is the Rav so happy that Arabs building? They're building their own house over there. He said, look, let them build. One day it'll be in our hands. They should build and we'll take it over. Why not? Why should we do the work? It was his time when the Arabs weren't building for Jews. They were building for Arabs. But that's it. Here, the future will be ours. It's not going to be somebody else's. That's the avoda. Tefillah, you can daven anywhere in Chutz La'aretz. Anywhere. But it's only because that place has a direct connection. The tefillah only goes, like we spoke about the first week with Yaakov Emden. The tefillah can only go up to Shemayim. There's only avoda in one place, not in Eretz Yisrael, and the Mokom HaMikdash specifically. The rest of Eretz Yisrael, the avoda, is a more physical avoda that supplements the avoda of the Beit HaMikdash. And therefore, you can't have avoda in Chutz La'aretz. Avoda can't go to Chutz La'aretz. It has to stay in Eretz Yisrael. Yitzchak couldn't leave. Yitzchak was amud ha'avoda. And therefore, if we're going to learn about tefillah, comes out now after 3 weeks, that it was a tremendous preface to the whole Indian of tefillah to understand the Nisoyin of Lech Lecha. Because now we understand that one of the ikrim of what Eretz Yisrael is all about is this idea of avoda. Chesed and Torah can and have to exist, even when it's necessary to exist outside of Eretz Yisrael. But with everything, avoda can't exist. Chutz La'aretz, it's only a pipeline. It's only it still needs that pipeline to be able to come back to Eretz Yisrael. And therefore, Yitzchak wasn't allowed to leave Eretz Yisrael. Yitzchak Hashem, next week, I hope, unless I get some other bug in me, we will start with the tefillah.